5 minutes.
Our speaker is Ian Akal, who last year with Adani Wise received the Veblen Prize in Geometry. We're very happy to have him speak to us. I once received a mathematics prize. It was in my dreams. There were six of us receiving awards. The first person got $150,000. I was number six, and my prize was a week at a casino in Las Vegas. So Ian will talk about the malnormal special quotient.
Okay, thanks a lot. Can you hear me? Okay, all right. So, thanks a lot to the organizers for the invitation to speak. And I apologize if you can't read what's on the board here, but you can always move down towards the front. I think there's a fair amount of space if you're having trouble reading it. But I couldn't really make the writing bigger. What I wanted to start with is maybe in some sense, a tribute to Thurston in the sense that in his Annals paper, he had a diagram that showed the logical, or the components of the proof of his geometrization theorem for Hockin manifolds and the logical implications, the ingredients that went into the various aspects of this problem. And I think this kind of has inspired other people, maybe Danny Caligari and Donnie Wise, to draw similar diagrams explaining the logic of their arguments. And I think actually David Dumas has a little script that if you take your paper, you have the various citations of different theorems in the paper, it'll draw a little diagram for you automatically. But I guess I'm not sure exactly what a script is. So I was born in Hollywood, California. So, so I wanted to go over this. So this is actually essentially a subset of Wise's diagram from his paper. He has this long preprint of 185 pages or so. That's at the beginning. This is sort of a map of the paper, and I've added in a few other things then that come after that. So. But the initial part is essentially his. So part of the story starts with these special cube complexes of Hagelin and Wise from around 07. The dates are not quite precise, which Donnie talked about in his talk already, so I'm not really going to review that. But these are have been sort of the beginning, at least of the higher dimensional theory. So he has some older work that's working mostly in sort of two dimensions that is actually a good motivation for his understanding his later work. And actually, this is also going back to work of Hagelin's on subgroup separability for right angle reflection groups. Xu and Wise proved a theorem about cubulating malnormal amalgams. It appeared in 12, I think the genesis was earlier. And there was another work by Hagelin and Wise, which also appeared in Annals of Math in 2012, but there was an earlier preprint on a combination theorem for virtually special cube complexes. Again, Donnie talked about cube complexes in his talk, and I'll try to mention a little bit about what these terms mean. And together, these imply this that if you have a hyperbolic group with a malnormal quasi-convex hierarchy, then it's virtually special. And in his paper then, Wise used this theorem to prove, plus this so-called cubical small cancellation theory, which composes about the first 100 pages or so of his paper, to prove what he calls the malnormal special quotient theorem. And that's sort of the key technical result from his paper. It's about two-thirds of the way through. What I wanted to talk about today was a little bit about a new proof of this theorem by myself with Groves and Manning. The preprints appeared this year. And essentially what we're doing is giving a new proof of this, but by reorganizing Wise's proof in some sense and using and replacing the cubical smell cancellation theory with the theory of relatively hyperbolic octane filling, which was due independently to Groves and Manning and Dennis Osen around 07 or so. And now there's actually many different different ways that you can, different sorts of machines that you can plug into here to give the right sort of small cancellation theory and making some of the arguments a little bit more geometric in some sense. So what Wise used this Mount-Normal special quotient theorem for in his paper was to prove that if you have a hyperbolic group with a quasi-convex hierarchy, again, I'll try to explain a little bit about what that is later, then it's virtually special. So it acts properly co-compactly on a cat zero cube complex that, with the fine index subgroup, which the quotient action is a special cube complex. And so this has the nice conjectures. It implied the Baumslag conjecture. So later in Wise's paper, he explains how if you have a one-relator group with torsion, so the relator is a proper power, then those groups have a quasi-convex hierarchy, and therefore this theorem implies that they're virtually special. In particular, they're residually finite, although it has a lot more consequences than that. It has, it proves that they're actually linear, and you have certain subgroup separability properties, et cetera. So that was, I think, Wise's main original motivation for trying to carry out this program, which in some sense he's doing his entire career working on this problem since he was a graduate student. But for me, the when I learned about Donnie's Mount-Normal special quotient theorem in I guess it was 2011 or so, then it proved. Using some earlier results of myself with Groves and Manning from around 2008, we realized that it proved a weak sort of separability result for subgroups, which then I was able to use to prove a conjecture in Donnie Wise's paper that cube complexes with hyperbolic fundamental group are virtually special. So that's, and this proof made use of a notion of height of quasi-convex subgroups of Jiddick, Mitra, Rips, and Sagiv from 98 or so. Was one of the key inputs there. Sort of an independent stream of things that you've heard Vlad talk about, Kahn Markovich in 2009 showed that closed hyperbolic free manifolds have these quasi-Fuchsian or quasi-convex surface subgroups. That fed into a theory of Sagiv that from his thesis at Berkeley in 96, that if you have a free manifold with a surface subgroup that you get an action on a cube complex, and then Bergeron and Wise almost immediately after that showed that hyperbolic free manifolds are cubulated in the sense that they're homotopy equivalent to a locally cat zero compact cube complex. And these two theorems then together imply that closed hyperbolic free manifolds are virtually special. They have a finite sheeted cover in which that cube complex is a special cube complex. This has then the implication that finite volume hyperbolic free manifolds are virtually fibered. So that was actually another component of Wise's paper that he took care of the finite volume case, and then this theorem, together with some of my previous work on a criteria for virtual fibering, implies that closed hyperbolic free manifolds are virtually fibered. So this was one of Thurston's questions or conjectures. And this also then implies the virtual Hawking conjecture via the geometrization theorem proved by Perelman in around 2003 and has been worked out by others. So that's sort of an overview, or just to place this talk in sort of context. So I think a lot of people have already heard me talk about this whole story before the past couple of years, but so I wanted to focus on this new proof of the Mount-Normal special quotient theorem in this talk. So and I guess the the topic of the conference is what's next. I don't really have a good answer for that. I've given some lists of problems at some previous in some previous talks. I think one of the biggest sort of open questions from this is are hyperbolic groups. Residually finite. So this is an old question. I think a lot of the experts believe that this is likely to be false. I think one of the last theorems that Thurston proved, although I think he didn't. He never wrote it up, but I know that he gave some talks on this, is that he showed that there you can construct, for any given dimension n, you can construct a hyperbolic group which has no non-trivial representations into GLn with coefficients in any field, finite or infinite or whatever. And I had a little discussion, I think the last time I saw him. We had a little discussion then, where he believes that there's examples of hyperbolic groups which are not residually finite. Although the techniques that he was using are, it's not clear that they're going to help with the general case. But I think one thing that could be next is if someone wants to work out, write down the proof of this theorem, then that would be quite interesting. So that would be, I think, a good topic for an ambitious graduate student or postdoc that's interested in this question to write up the proof of examples of hyperbolic groups with no GL and F reps. So for given N, there's a hyperbolic group that has no GL and F, non-trivial GL and F reps. That's what, I've only heard this sort of secondhand. I had a little discussion with him, but I think that's essentially what he was claiming. I certainly have thought about this question. The main theorem here then, cube complexes with hyperbolic fundamental group are virtually special. This conjecture wise, this gives large classes of hyperbolic groups then, which are residually finite. But this is not going to answer this question in general, because there's also plenty of hyperbolic groups that can't possibly act non-trivially without fixed points on a cube complex. So this approach is in some sense never going to unlikely to say anything about this general question. If indeed hyperbolic groups are residually finite, if they are residually finite, then there's probably going to have to be some completely new approach, and it would essentially supersede whatever techniques are being used in the proof of this theorem in some sense. If they're not residually finite, then, well, you need a completely new sort of way of showing that something is not residually finite, because so far hyperbolic groups test, they pass all the tests of residual finiteness that are sort of easy to check, like Hopfian or Coopfian, I guess. I always mix those two up. But anyways, if you have an epimorphism from a hyperbolic group to itself, then it actually has to be an isomorphism, things like that, which hold for residually finite groups, hold for hyperbolic groups. And it like holds for their subgroups as well, which is something else, finitely generated subgroups, which you'd also expect. So things like that, they seem to behave like residually finite groups for all intents and purposes. So I think that's an interesting question of what's next. Maybe I'll just mention one other question. So are hyperbolic groups cat minus one. So cat minus one means that you have a similar to cat zero, except you compare with a hyperbolic triangle instead of a Euclidean triangle, like Donnie explained in his talk. And saying cat minus one would mean that you'd have a proper co-compact action on a cat minus one space. So hyperbolic manifolds, for example, are cat minus one, but it's not known whether hyperbolic groups have that property. So there's a question of Gromov, and so one possible case is to try to analyze this for cumulated hyperbolic groups. If you have a cumulation, you pass to a finite shaded cover, which is special, and then you try to mimic the Thurston's proof of hyperbolization. Try to find, you have this hierarchy, you cut along all the walls into pieces, and you put a cat minus one metric on those pieces, and then try to sort of glue those together inductively to get a global cat minus one metric, maybe on that cube complex or on some modification of it. And then you could try to push that down from a finite sheet of cover downstairs. Or maybe you could look at weaker things like just sort of angle structures on two complexes or something like that. So I think that's another possible opportunity. But I mean, obviously I don't know how to get even started on that, but maybe someone might have an idea. So that those are a couple of things that could be interesting. Okay, is there any questions so far? So then I want to start by describing some of what these terms are and then state the Malnormal special quotient theorem and then talk a little bit about some of the ingredients of the proof. Delta hyperbolic spaces. I'm not sure if this has been defined yet because I missed the first couple days of the conference, but I'll just review this. We say that a metric space is geodesic if every pair of points is connected by a geodesic. For example, if you take a graph and just let every edge have length one, then that defines a path metric, which is geodesic. a subset of X is lambda quasi-convex if for any pair of points the geodesic connecting, it's all right, A, B, lies in a neighborhood of radius lambda about the set A. For any geodesic, yeah. Related to what Mladen was just talking about. If you have a geodesic metric space, then in which if I have a geodesic connecting A, B union, the geodesic connecting B and C is this set is delta quasi-convex for all A, B, C, and X. And for any, this is indicating any geodesic connecting A and B, any geodesic connecting B and C. Then X is delta hyperbolic. So this means if you take the lambda neighborhood of these two geodesics, then any geodesic connecting A and C has to lie inside of this lambda neighborhood of the union of these two geodesics. So you first track lambda close to the geodesic from AB, and then you hop over to B and C and track that for a while. So lambda equals delta. Where's the lambda here? Oh, thanks. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Good. So, oh, I can erase that. Okay. Okay. So now a group, finally generated group, is hyperbolic if it's Cayley graphed. So G is hyperbolic. If its Cayley graph is delta hyperbolic for some delta. So, and this, it turns out, doesn't depend if you have some, this is a finally generated group G is hyperbolic. If you choose a different set of generators, then it'll remain delta hyperbolic for potentially a different delta. Okay, so the statement of for the statement of Malnormal special quotient theorem, it applies to a hyperbolic group that acts properly co-compactly on a CAD0 cube complex, and that has there's a finite sheeted cover of that cube complex, or a finite index subgroup, such that the quotient of that action by the group is special. It's better a little bit to talk about groups acting on cube complexes rather than talk about sort of fundamental groups of cube complexes, because you want to be able to allow torsion, in which case if you talk about the fundamental group of if you have a group with torsion acting on a cube complex, then the finite order elements will have to have fixed points, and the quotient will be a topological space, but its fundamental group won't necessarily be the group that you started with. The right category to work with would be some kind of orbifold version of cube complexes, which if you're from France, you're probably comfortable working with some of these things, like, you know, tall groupoids and things like that. But rather than working with those and talking about the fundamental groups of these things, then you can just work with groups acting on cube complexes. And it's actually important in this theory to, you know, allow torsion. So then G is cubulated if it is if it acts properly co-compactly on a CAD0 cube complex. Okay, I'm gonna have to erase some of this diagram, I guess. Now I need to say a few more terms. So Donnie's already described CAD0 cube complexes and special cube complexes, so I'm not going to review that. But so if we have a group G and a subgroup, H in G is Malnormal. And here, I'll say almost Malnormal if when we take G in G, H intersected with G, H, G inverse is infinite if and only if G is contained in the subgroup H. So another way is, well, so it's malnormal if any non-trivial conjugate of H intersects H only in the identity. It's almost malnormal if any non-trivial conjugate of H intersects H in a finite set. So an example to keep in mind here would be if you have a primitive geodesic on a surface, or primitive element of a free group, say, then it's it represents a malnormal subgroup. Cyclic subgroup. More generally, if you look at a hyperbolic group and you look at if you look at maximal elementary subgroups, so these are subgroups that have a fine index cyclic subgroup, you look at maximal such ones, and then you look at a collection of those groups are almost malnormal. There's a related notion then of a collection of a malnormal subgroup, so H1 through HN in G is almost malnormal collection. If a similar thing holds, so if HI intersects G, HG inverse, HJ is infinite, then that implies that I equals J and G is contained in HI. So again, a collection of primitive curves on a surface, which are distinct, gives you an almost malnormal collection of subgroups of the surface group. The notion of being almost malnormal, you can replace any of these guys then by any of their conjugates. When I say a geodesic on a surface, that only gives you a conjugacy class of cyclic subgroups. But up to conjugacy, this notion doesn't matter. And it's, I guess, malnormal because it's sort of far away from being normal as possible. You intersect with a conjugate and you get something that's as far from being equal to the subgroup as possible. So now we say a subgroup is if G is hyperbolic, and H is in G, we can think of H as sitting inside the Cayley graph of G. And then we say that, and so if G is hyperbolic, the Cayley graph is delta hyperbolic for some delta. So then we say that H is quasi-convex if it's a lambda quasi-convex subset of the Cayley graph of G for some lambda. If it's lambda quasi-convex. For some lambda. And again, if you change the sort of Morse lemma that the Mladen was referring to implies for geodesics in hyperbolic spaces implies that if you change the generating set, you get a quasi-symmetric Cayley graph, and then the subsets that are lambda quasi-convex with respect to one Kähler graph will be quasi-convex with respect to a different Kähler graph with a potentially different constant. So now I think we have all of the terms that needed to state the Malnormal special quotient theorem. So this is the Malnormal virtually special quotient theorem, I think he called it, but I guess we dropped virtual from the title. So this states that if you have H1 through HN are in G, and G is virtually special hyperbolic, and HI is quasi-convex, and H1 through HN is a a Malnormal collection. So Malnormal collection of quasi-convex subgroups. This is equivalent to saying that G is hyperbolic relative to this collection of subgroups. So they sort of behave like cusps of a hyperbolic manifold. there exists HI dot less than HI, a normal subgroup, a finite index subgroup, finite index and normal, such that if we take further subgroups inside of these, if HI double dot is in HI dot, and the finite index in HI and normal, so this is normal in HI, then the quotient group G mod, so I'm going to take the normal subgroup generated by all these HI double dots, is virtually special. Oh, so, thanks. Almost Malnormal. Yeah. It turns out that you can deduce the almost Malnormal case from the Malnormal one, but it's, almost Malnormal means, if the intersection between any non-trivial conjugates is infinite, then G would have to be contained in H. Malnormal means that if the intersection between any two conjugates is non-trivial, meaning not the identity, then G would have to be contained in H. It's maybe easier to say in the other direction, so that H intersects any non-trivial conjugate in the trivial element, if and only if the group H is Malnormal. It's almost Malnormal if it intersects non-trivial conjugates in a finite set. another example of a Malnormal subgroup is an embedded totally geodesic surface in the hyperbolic free manifold. So that's, in the surface case, you can take any primitive geodesic because it won't intersect any conjugates non-trivially. If you take a geodesic surface mapped into a closed hyperbolic free manifold, then that's a quasi-convex subgroup. But anytime it intersects itself, you're going to get a curve of intersection, which is going to give you an infinite intersection between that subgroup represented by that and some non-trivial conjugate represented by the intersecting branch. And so for a a surface in a three manifold to be malnormal, then it at least has to be embedded. And also, there can't be sort of any product regions between the surfaces. If it's geodesic, then that won't happen, for example. But if you have a hyperbolic three-orbifold, then again, an embedded totally geodesic suborbifold is going to be, it's going to be quasi-convex, but it might only be almost malnormal because there might be some finite order elliptic axis that intersects the surface orthogonally and gives you a conjugacy, an intersection between a conjugate of that and another subgroup that's finite. So that's the sort of why you need almost to deal with torsion. Okay, so, yeah. Oh, thanks. I think I said it and I didn't try. It has to be, finite index. Now, I should say here now that the extension that, our new proof gives a little extension of this theorem, which is worth stating, but for which we don't really have any applications. It's just, so the extension that we have now is that now we don't need to be finite index, but we want HI mod HI double dot to be virtually special hyperbolic. Okay, so maybe before I discuss this theorem, I'll state briefly, what it's useful for. So now.
Just a quick question.
Oh, yeah.
The new quotient is again M12.
Yeah, that's right. Virtually spelled. Again, I stated it, but I didn't write it down. Yeah, hyperbolic. Thanks. The hyperbolicity follows from relatively hyperbolic Dane filling. So that was known how to do a while ago, but it's the virtual special part of this that's new and interesting. So why is this theorem difficult or interesting? I guess part of the reason is that if you take a residually finite group, and you kill some element in the group, or even some high power of an element, then most likely you're not going to get a residually finite group again. Or it seems, unless maybe the right category of hyperbolic groups end up being residually finite or something, then maybe it holds in a great generality. But if you just take a generic residually finite group, it's very hard, in general, to show that a quotient group is also residually finite. It's a condition that certainly doesn't hold under quotients. The role that it plays in these theorems is the Schuh-Weiss and the Hagen-Weiss theorems together show that if you have a hyperbolic group with a malnormal quasi-convex hierarchy, what that means is you can start with some finite groups and you can take some amalgamated products or H and N extensions of those groups and iterate that process. But you want to do it in a way that preserves that the groups are hyperbolic and preserves and has the fact that the amalgamating subgroups are all quasi-convex and almost malnormal at each stage. Then that's a group with a malnormal quasi-convex hierarchy. So examples of these would be if you had a closed hyperbolic three-manifold that had a bunch of embedded totally geodesic surfaces that, say, cut up the manifold into balls. Then those surfaces, you could chop along those and get a bunch of amalgamated products and H and N extensions that reduce you down to a bunch of trivial groups. Their theorem then implies that those groups are virtually special. That was a quite interesting consequence of that. And I think again, this theorem appeared much earlier, at least in abstracts of talks that I've seen on the interweb. So if you have a quasi-convex hierarchy, then again, you have a decomposition of a hyperbolic group into a sequence of amalgamated products and H-genetic extensions along quasi-convex subgroups down to finite groups. But now the amalgamating groups are no longer necessarily necessarily almost malnormal, or don't necessarily form an almost malnormal collection. So the malnormal special quotient theorem, what it allows you to do is to take a quasi-convex subgroup and take some quotient of it in a controlled way, such that the quotient, the image of that subgroup in the quotient now is malnormal, or even finite. And the way that's done is by an inductive procedure. So Wiesow has a version of this in his paper using the cubical small cancellation theory. Groves and Manning and myself proved this using relatively hyperbolic Dane filling. And that's also the technique that we use for the weak separability result. So maybe I'll state now the weak separability result that we get from this theorem. And the idea there is to you induct on the so-called height of the subgroup, the notion introduced by Gidet, Mitra, Rips, and Sagiv. So if you have a quasi-convex group that's not malnormal, that means it intersects some conjugate in an infinite, non-trivial conjugate, an infinite subgroup. And you can look at the maximal intersections between various conjugates, and that gives you the so-called height of that quasi-convex subgroup. And so what you can do is if you start with a subgroup, if H less than G, I mean, this applies more generally to a collection of subgroups, is quasi-convex. And virtually special, then what we can do is take, so an example would be you have a hyperbolic free manifold, and you have some immersed surface that, say, self-intersects in a single geodesic. It's a little hard to draw, I guess, but. So this, so there's a single self-intersection, which is a geodesic, and let's say the only non-trivial conjugate of that subgroup intersecting itself is in this closed curve. So if I take H intersect G, HG, so H would be represented, if we put base points on things, H is pi 1 of the surface with respect to this base point, and then we take a G that goes around, a loop that goes around here, then H intersect GHG inverse would give you the fundamental group of this loop. Some geodesic loop gamma. And now that's a malnormal subgroup. So, and we also know that surface groups are cat zero cubulate. They're actually special groups. There's actually an explicit special cubulation of them. And so when you intersect quasi-convex subgroups, you also get a quasi-convex subgroup. The theory of heights of subgroups shows that the height goes down, and now you can apply the malnormal special quotient theorem to kill some power of this element. So you kill a power of gamma. I realize I'm abusing notation here. Hopefully Henry can understand it. The quotient is hyperbolic. And the image of the subgroup, again, for killing a large enough power, the image of the subgroup we can prove will remain quasi-convex. But not only that, we can also show that the intersection of this subgroup with its conjugate is now precisely just the image of gamma, which is now a finite group. And so now this group becomes almost malnormal in the quotient. So the image of H becomes almost malnormal. And by this virtual special quotient theorem, and virtually special. So the image of the surface group, so in other words, I take the surface group, when I kill a high power gamma, I'm killing precisely what I expect to be killing in H, namely I'm killing the high power of gamma and its conjugate by G inside of H, inside of this surface, you're going to see a couple of copies of gamma. So there'll be gamma here, and then there'll be sort of G applied to gamma, which corresponds to the conjugate subgroup. And you're going to kill a finite power of both of those geodesics. So the theory of relatively arbitrary octane filling and this quasi-convexity allows you to show that you're killing precisely what you expect to be killing. And then by the virtual special malnormal quotient theorem, we know that that curve, the quotient group, the image of H, then, is virtually special. So that's where this comes into proving weak separability. So what is weak separability? I forgot to say, then you do this again now to the image of H. So you kill, so the malnormal special quotient theorem allows us to inductively kill images of a subgroup until we have something finite. Kill a finite index subgroup of H now. And we get a quotient which is a little hard to imagine. It's certainly not a hyperbolic three-manifold group anymore. It might even be a very high-dimensional hyperbolic group. But again, from this theorem, we know that it's from the relative hyperbolic octane filling, we know that each of these quotients for large enough index subgroups will be hyperbolic. And now the image of H in this hyperbolic group is going to be finite. So that's essentially what weak separability means. So weak separability is if we have some other elements that's not in this group, then so we choose some other element in our group, H, then we can also guarantee that when we take this quotient for a high enough power of gamma, that the image of H doesn't contain this element H. And then we kill the quotient of H inside of this this quotient, and the same thing holds at each stage. So again, by killing sort of large enough index subgroups, you can guarantee at each stage that any element that's not in that subgroup will also not be in the subgroup in the quotient. Now, little h is representing some other loop in our that's not in the subgroup H. Yeah, so we're trying to separate it. So now I'll try to state the weak separability. Thanks. I shouldn't have used H. So.
There are other letters in.
Okay. I was taking the advice of these panelists not to follow my notes. But I can blame the organizers. All right, so now weak separability. So the theorem then so this is in the appendix to our paper, says that if H is subgroup of G, G is hyperbolic, H quasi-convex, Incidentally, I guess I didn't mention quasi-convex subgroups. The hyperbolic groups are also hyperbolic for some other potentially different delta, and virtually special. Then for any H not contained in H, there exists phi taking G to some quotient group, I'll just call G bar, such that phi of H is finite, and phi of little h is also, we've kept it separated from phi of the subgroup H. And so the argument is essentially a generalization of what I was trying to describe here, that you take these successive quotients of the intersections between these malnormal intersections between conjugates of H, you kill those, decrease the height until you get to something where the quotient is has finite image, and guaranteeing at each stage that H is still missing the image of the subgroup. Sorry? Oh, yeah, and G bar is hyperbolic. Thanks. Although, actually, the fact that it's hyperbolic doesn't really enter into the proof, turns out. So, right. So, let me just make a couple comments here. So, the original version of Wise's preprint from 2011, or maybe earlier for some people, that was distributed, had a weaker version of the malnormal special quotient theorem than the one that I stated here, where you didn't necessarily get to control. It just stated there's finite index subgroups, and then there's further finite index subgroups, such as this holds, but you didn't get to choose what these subgroups were. And it's a key point here to be able to take an arbitrary further finite index normal subgroup of HI at this stage in this sort of argument here, essentially because you can have things like where the surface intersects a conjugate of itself, but in say a geodesic that's not primitive. And then to get something malnormal, you have to take its sort of commensurator, the maximal stabilizer of that up to conjugacy in the group, and that just sort of messes with things. Then you can't choose. You know, you might make some choice for this guy here and some choice for this guy here, but they might not be consistent on their intersection in the image here. And so it was very key that Donnie proved this sort of stronger version of the malnormal special quotient theorem, where you didn't have to, you could choose this subgroup arbitrarily. Let me just make another comment. What's next? I think an interesting question is, can you eliminate, can you make a stronger statement here? So instead of saying that HI double dot, well, we still want it to be a normal subgroup of HI, but if we just avoid finitely many elements in HI, can we guarantee that this quotient is still virtually special? So now by my theorem, you only need to show the quotient is cubulated. Unfortunately, the way that cubulation is proved in this theorem is kind of indirect. You find a quotient of a finite index subgroup that has a malnormal quasi-convex hierarchy, and then by the Schuh-Wise and Hagen-Wise results, you have malnormal, almost malnormal quasi-convex hierarchy, then you're virtually special. So the cubulation of the quotient is constructed indirectly by taking this malnormal hierarchy. That's also necessary for the proof of this extension. But so a question then, or I would say even a conjecture, is that there exists finitely many non-trivial elements. I should use a different letter. Anyone have a good letter? F1 through FK in HI, such that if HI double dot intersected with F1 through FK, is empty, and HI double dot is normal in HI, and finite index, then, and I should say that this is precisely the conditions in relatively hyperbolic Dane filling. There's a finite collection of elements in there, such that if you avoid those elements, then the quotient by a finite index normal subgroup that avoids those elements will be delta hyperbolic for some delta. That's essentially a statement of the relatively hyperbolic Dane filling in this case. And you know, it's a generalization of Thurston's hyperbolic Dane filling theorem for cusped hyperbolic manifolds, which says that if you avoid finitely many elements in each cusp of a hyperbolic manifold, any other Dane filling that you have will be hyperbolic. So it's kind of analogous to that. Okay, so then G mod, the normal subgroup generated by these HI double dots, is virtually special hyperbolic. And so the tricky thing is here to construct the cubulation before taking the, or, you know, before taking the quotient, because, anyways, that's something I don't really know how to do, but if you understand Shu Wise's proof enough, well enough, you might be able to figure out how to sort of cubulate before taking the quotient, or something like that, but that's just a vague idea. Okay, so, let's see, and I guess I have like 5 minutes or less, okay. Okay, and then let me make a quick comment about how weak separability goes into the proof of the virtual special cube complexes theorem. So if you start with a cube complex with hyperbolic fundamental groups, so like a closed hyperbolic free manifold that's been cubulated by a bunch of these Kahn-Markovich quasi-Fuchsian surfaces, then by induction, you know that the hyperplanes of that cube complex are virtually special. So weak separability means that they're also weakly separable. So you can pass to an infinite sheet of cover in which all the preimages of those hyperplanes are all compact. So like in a free manifold, what this is saying is that you can find an infinite covering space where the preimage of this immersed surface is all the preimages are compact. So you can use, compact, but now they're also embedded, and you can even get this infinite cover that sort of looks special, but the problem is it's infinite. We want a finite sheet of cover where all the walls become embedded, which is essentially equivalent to the virtual Hawking conjecture. So the final proof then starts with this infinite sheet of covering space and chops it up into pieces and then sort of reassembles those pieces by reverse engineering a hierarchy for a finite sheeted cover of this cube complex. So that's a quick summary of why this weak separability is useful and interesting. But you know, there might be other applications of this weak separability of the Mountain Normal Special Quotient Theorem in other contexts. okay, so in the last minute or two, I'll say a couple words. So so the idea of the of the Mountain Normal Special Quotient Theorem, you start with the walls. Of the cube complex, and you sort of tube them. Together with whenever they cross the peripheral complexes. So we have these peripheral subgroups, the H1 through HN. You represent those by nice immersed quasi-convex subcomplexes. And so whenever a wall crosses one of these subcomplexes, you want to sort of glue them together in a way. So you actually do this in a finite sheet of covering space. So what it's very reminiscent of, something I learned about when I was a graduate student, this so-called Friedman tubing. So it's kind of analogous to So you should think of these HIs as like cusps of a hyperbolic free manifold, and the walls as like quasi-Fuchsian surfaces sitting inside of that hyperbolic free manifold. And what this is analogous to, and I guess I have to draw a cusp like this. So we have some surface inside of a three manifold, and what you can do is you can take two copies of the surface and you can tube them together around the cusp. So I'll just draw it one dimension lower. So you sort of wind around the cusp until it comes back. And you can create a geometrically finite surface inside that hyperbolic three manifold. And Cooper and Long worked out a version of this that allows you, so you create these closed surfaces from surfaces with boundary. And that's kind of analogous to what's going on here. And then the idea is that you pass to a finite sheet of cover where these surfaces become embedded, and that's where you're using specialness. Subgroup separability allows you to pass to covers where all these things become embedded, and then you do the hyperbolic gain filling in that finite sheet of covering space, and all these surfaces give you a hierarchy of the quotient. And if you arrange it right, that hierarchy is malnormal, quasi-convex, even when you pass to the quotient. So the way this differs from Wise's argument is that he first does the Dane filling, and then he sort of creates the walls by crossing things through themselves. So there was an earlier version of this due to Bergeron, I think inspired by by Wise's ideas, where he did this for cyclic covers, branch covers over the figure eight knot complement of certain indices. He took totally geodesic surfaces in there and crossed them through the Dane-filled cusps. And that's very much analogous to what Wise does in his proof. But in some sense, what we're doing is we're creating the walls at first that are compatible with the quotient. So the fact is that the peripheral subgroups will all sort of lie inside of the new walls that we create. There's also a further cover you have to pass to that makes walls that might become one-sided makes them two-sided, which is also a component from Wise's proof. So that's sort of a summary. We guarantee that everything is malnormal, quasi-convex, sort of geometrically by using delta hyperbolicity and quasi-convexity and adding on cusps to the space, which allow you to control the delta hyperbolicity constant of the corresponding quotients. And makes some of these arguments much more geometric and analogous to the Kleinian groups case. All right, so I apologize for going over. I'll stop there. So.
Are there questions? Okay.
Path connected, but I don't know if you satisfy all the other metrization axioms, whatever I forget the most general version, and you're path connected, is that sufficient? Or I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I guess you want locally path connected too. I have no idea. Yeah, I guess in this theory the path. You know, geodesic metric space is just sort of convenient in in defining Gromov hyperbolicity, it's not necessary. There's another way to define it using Gromov products that avoids the geodesic metric spaces, but that's just a convenient way to describe this. Uh-huh, yeah, okay. Yeah, asymptotic cones.
But I think, are they actually, the metric constructed on them actually geodesic on the nodes?
I think if you start with it, if you take a limit, like an ultra product, an ultra limit of geodesic metric spaces, I think it remains geodesic.
So you don't have to apply that theorem in that situation. Yeah. That's getting closer.
This new approach relates to the accumulation of two of the old and the new version things.
Does
the new approach relates the old accumulation and the new accumulation schedule before and after the
The way this works is you get it follows Wise's approach where you get a malnormal quasi-convex hierarchy. Actually, there is an action on a cube complex. So all the walls, these sort of tubed walls, do give you an action on a cube complex. The problem is that, and you have these, the peripheral subgroups will stabilize vertices of the cube complex, which is sort of what you want, because if you're killing a finite subgroup of them, you want it to stabilize a vertex. The problem is there's larger subgroups, which are free products of these vertex group, of these peripheral subgroups that stabilize. What it's kind of analogous to is if you have two surfaces in a three manifold, they intersect generically in some arcs, and these arcs, if you take the peripheral, copies of the peripheral subgroup sort of tube together along these arcs, you get a free product of the cusp groups. And when you kill sort of finite subgroups of those surface groups using this technology, then you tend to get action on a cube complex, but now you have these sort of tube together guys are acting with fixed points. And so you sort of have to, that's the last stage of the hierarchy, and then you have to create walls, which Shu and Wise do, that sort of cut through or separate those vertices. So if you could somehow do that before you did the filling, then you would get the cubulation. You'd probably be able to understand things like this conjecture. But it's still indirect. And for the stronger version here, where these quotients are only virtually special hyperbolic, you really do need, I think it'd be really hard to sort of create the walls before doing the Dane filling, keeping everything uniform. But that's, a little technical.
Before we thank Ian again, remember that this afternoon's session starts a little earlier than it has earlier in the week. So, 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock. Okay, we'd like to thank Ian again.